Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Welcome back to the Powered by Transova podcast. Super excited to share with you all our guest today, Dr. Ashley Swenson from Minnesota, who is one of our partnering with practitioners here at Transova. So thank you, Ashley, for joining us. How are you doing today?
No problem. I'm happy to be here. I'm doing really well today. Hopefully the sun shines soon and we can get some field work started. But other than that, doing really well.
Good. Yeah, I'm sick of the rain, but I know there's places that could use it, so I won't complain too much here. Ashley, why don't you go ahead, introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about your background, how you got to be where you are today, and your practice.
Sure. So, like you said, I'm Ashley Swenson. I grew up on a dairy farm in Minnesota. We raised primarily Holsteins, but we also have Brown Swiss and Ayrshire dairy cattle, all registered. So we milk about 240 cows and we raise all of our own young stock. And so my first introduction to embryo transfer work is the stuff that we utilized here on our own farm. We utilize both conventional flushing, and we also utilized IVF procedures prior to my involvement in the industry. And so, yeah, we have experience from both personal and domestic and export side of things. So it made a really symbiotic relationship then for me to continue on with my career and jump into the embryo transfer side of things. But in some of my background too, I was able to intern with Sunshine Genetics and Transova through my veterinary school work. And so I got a lot of great experience through those two organizations. And then I also worked really closely with Dr. David Duxbury, who is actually the founder of the practice that I now own.
So Ashley, I know you said you were an intern with us. Were you in vet school at that point when you interned with Transova?
Yes. Yeah, so I believe I was in my second year of veterinary school. I just completed my second year when I was an intern. And I worked on the main farm. I was the main farm intern that summer. So my roles were working with recips, helping with shoot work, getting animals tagged, all of the data entry, embryos loaded, helping thaw embryos, you name it. I was running around doing it. So Yeah, that was a really great experience just because growing up on a dairy farm, I obviously worked with cattle, but having exposure on the beef side of things and at that volume and scale was really beneficial. And also it was my first experience watching the IVF fertilization and all of that part in depth and being able to get a lot of my questions answered and understand even just the process that you guys do from start to finish in the lab has really helped me understand what I need to do as a practitioner to help your lab be more successful and in the end really to make sure our clients are successful.
I think that was my first summer as a full-time employee when you interned. So I'm glad that we didn't scare you off too bad.
This is fun. Being able to maintain a lot of those connections too. It's been a really, really great experience to be able to still call up and talk to somebody that I know personally and people that I'm friends with.
Sounds like that internship and experience got your hands dirty, maybe pun intended, in all of this space, and that, you know, you really got a hands-on feel for what you were going to do. Can you tell us a little bit more about what services your practice offers?
Sure. So we actually offer beef and dairy services. So actually a good portion of our clients are actually beef clients. And so we offer conventional flushing or on-farm flushing in vivo collections like people think about when they think about flushing. But we also do the IVF. So we do the OPUs or the ovum pickups and handle those fresh embryos on the backside, and we can implant those fresh or we freeze anything that's remaining for clients. We're also involved in the export side of things. And so we do export collections both for conventional flushing and for IVF. We also handle other consolidated shipments too. So our team puts together a shipment that might go to the EU or China, Japan. We've really been able to offer the kind of the whole service for people. The only piece we don't do is the actual fertilization for the IVF. That's where Transova comes into play. So that's where we utilize Transova services.
So building off of that, Ashley, you're partnering with Practitioner with us, you know, and as you said, we do the fertilizations and you do everything else. How has that impacted your business, you know, since starting that? And also too, we've talked to a lot of our client service reps about our side of that partnership. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what it's like on your side.
Sure. So we've been partnering with Transova since, I believe, the fall of 2016. So time flies. The IVF side and the way it's impacted, the IVF side has really grown in our practice. And I think the industry has seen that as a whole. More and more work that's done as far as advanced repro technologies. The threshold has been crossed that IVF procedures and IVF produced embryos have superseded in vivo collections at this point in the game. And so it's been really beneficial for us to be able to offer that service as clients grow in their own farms and how they change. So to be able to grow with them has been really important. And it's really helped us to provide an alternative. That was our initial goal when we went into this, is that we wanted to be able to provide all the different services. So we wanted people to be able to stay with us if they wanted to do IVF work. And maybe it was because the cow's pregnant. Now they want to do something. Maybe there was an old calving injury or the animal, they just need an alternative, especially with semen availability and different things. So partnering has really helped us and our customers grow for both our practice and in their farm system. So we've been happy about incorporating it and offering it as a service.
Definitely kind of a beneficial partnership where you get to maintain your clientele, but then, you know, kind of offer a more robust service selection, so to speak. So I think that's what's really exciting about the PWP program. And I think that's a great description of how that works. Now, Emily and I get to pick on our vets all the time and ask them questions. So I think now we're gonna pick on you a little bit and get your perspective on some of this. As an advanced reproductive technology practitioner and dairy producer, what are things someone should do nutritionally maybe to increase their reproductive performance? Or, you know, what are your thoughts on that aspect of the breeding program?
Yeah, so I'm going to sound like a broken record probably from the answers that people hear all the time, but it really starts with high quality forages on the front end. So the more high quality feed we can make, that's going to result in high quality embryos. So if we start with a good product, we're going to set ourselves up for success to have a good product in the end. So high quality forages. And then as far as probably the most common question I get is about different supplements. And supplements are just that. They're supplements when we have times of need. And so we consider when maybe dry matter intakes are going to be compromised. So maybe heat mitigation isn't a strong suit on your farm. And so we have decreased intakes because of heat stress. Well, maybe that's the time that we need to look at adding in an injectable supplement or putting in lick tubs if it's a heifer facility, free choice mineral, those types of scenarios where we can just help make sure those micronutrients are being met. But then it also comes down to donor specific needs. So gestation, age. So if we're working with really young animals, we really need to make sure that they're meeting or exceeding their cohort's growth and development rates. That's going to help us have better outcomes, things like gestation, making sure there's enough energy in those diets to get animals where they need to be to perform. One thing I always caution people on, though, is about less can be more in the sense of making sure that the things we're adding or supplementing are not embryo toxic. So there's products like urea. If those are the primary ingredient in different protein mixes or supplements, excess urea can actually be embryo toxic. So we think we're doing something good, but we're actually holding ourselves back. And overfeeding heavy metals. So it just all depends on what your forage types are. Working with a nutritionist is really important. So we're spending all this money trying to get a good product. So making sure we're putting in the resources on the front end to set ourselves up for success.
Yeah, I definitely think that's important. And, you know, a couple episodes ago, we talked with some people from Multimin, which they, you know, really emphasize minerals and how that affects reproduction. And I think you hit on some good things of nutrition just in general, what being conscious of the ingredients in that and how it can be detrimental to embryo health, which not everybody thinks about until it's too late, right? So I'm glad that you brought that up.
And one thing too, that people try to save money. I mean, we're all farmers. We all need to be conscious about our bottom line. But there's other things too, like making sure our byproduct feeds are being stored properly. So if there's wet distillers that are being used or wet beet pulp, sweet corn silage when that season hits, being cognizant of what kind of micronutrients are available in all of those different feedstuffs and how storing them properly. So making sure that you have fresh deliveries or you're able to bag or ensile some of those things, because otherwise if we get moldy feeds, we can get a mycotoxin situation, which can definitely impact our embryo quality.
Yeah, all good points. On the flip side, another big question that we get with reproductive health and success is, you know, how do you as an ET practitioner determine how much to stimulate a donor or if at all? What is your thought? What is your thought process? And maybe that's a trade secret. Maybe we shouldn't ask.
No, it's all good. It depends question for sure. So stimulation is all related to what our client's goals are. And so if, and their system and their management type and what they're able to achieve. So some animals, they say, well, she's really wild and we at most can get one injection in her, or we can't at all. And so some of these different factors play a role into what we recommend. But at the end of the day, when we dose donors, it's based on thousands of collections. The nice thing about partnering with practitioners too is if we get a new breed of cattle we haven't worked before, or a scenario where we're saying, hey, we've compared this to all of our data, you have an even bigger data set, can you, you know, provide any insight as to maybe something we can do to troubleshoot this particular donor? But we consider the age, the breed, if they're pregnant or not, previous history, whether that's in vivo flush history or IVF at a different facility or previous collections we've done. Stimulation is all really up to what the client's goals are. So I actually recently looked at the AETA data as well, looking at stimulated versus non. And it depends on the donor. I tell people this all the time, is we can really achieve the same number of oocytes, regardless if we stimulate or not. But really, it comes down to age of those donors and some other factors as far as what our results are going to be. So looking at tens of thousands of collections at AETA, we were looking at the same number of oocytes basically between each collection, stimulated versus non. So we're 16.6 versus 17.6 stimulated, but the differences come down to how many fertilized. So we only had 66% of the non-stimulated oocytes fertilized versus 87% in the stimulated donors. And that comes down to a little term we call competency, or basically the readiness of that oocyte to become fertilized. There's things that obviously the lab can do to help stimulate and grow those oocytes in the dish, but there's only so much we can do versus utilizing Mother Nature. And then on the end product, as far as viable embryos are concerned in the dairy side, only 16% of those made embryos. So you're looking at 2.6 embryos with non-stim versus 27% embryo development and 4.7 embryos on the stimulated side. So you're looking at two full embryo difference on the dairy side. And on the beef side, we see a similar trend. There's 4.3 versus 7.5 embryos produced. So again, 2.5 embryo difference between the two systems. Again, it all comes down to cost at the end of the day. Maybe it's the donor that, you know, that extra couple bucks in embryo doesn't pan out for her from the labor standpoint, stimulation standpoint. I get it. It all makes sense. If the goal is to maximize the number of embryos from that donor, our blanket recommendation then would be to stimulate her and try to maximize our outcomes.
I think that's interesting data that you've shared, Ashley. And I know it's something, you know, Emily, we've gone over within Transova as well, is our own data on some of that. And, you know, the goal is ultimately pregnancy and then obviously a happy, healthy calf at the end of that. And so what works for some people doesn't for others. And so, like you said, it's highly situational. You know, there's a lot of instances where we do recommend FSH, but there's also times when it makes sense to not. You know, from a marketing perspective, Emily and I wish it was really cut and dry, you know, that we could just be like, XYZ, you know, here's the formula, here's why or why not you should. But, you know, unfortunately, that's not how it works. But that is interesting data that you shared. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. And I think one piece too, with the different choices people make, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's some non-stimulated donors that do better than stimulated donors. So it's definitely, and it depends. If people want to try the non-stimulated route, typically we'll try non-stimulated. We'll see how they do. If the outcomes are undesirable, then we'll typically enroll them in a stimulated program to try to improve those outcomes.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever the answer that people want to hear either, that it depends. You know, from a marketing standpoint, yeah, we want it cut and dry. But even from a client standpoint, or even as a producer, you raise cattle, you want to, like, this is the cookie cutter answer that's going to work for everybody. And it's not that simple. And what I like about the data that you shared, it's from AETA, which is the American Embryo Transfer Association. So that's like blanketed industry results, not just one certain practitioner.
That's from over a million different collections on the dairy side. So I'd say it's pretty accurate data. And so I think, yeah, we just need to go into each situation, figure out what each client's goals are for that end product and go from there. And that's really what I tell everybody. It's a case by case basis. And we really pride ourselves on treating each donor individually and as if they were our own, because we get it. Being producers ourselves, my family, we get it. The outcomes are what matters at the end of the day.
On a similar, but some not similar, what are your preference on using natural heats or setting up dairy recips for embryo transfer? What do you think the benefits of each are? Do you have a preference, Ashley?
Yeah, I think you must have like a most frequently asked question list, because these are definitely the questions that I get asked all of the time. So
how much time do you have?
Yeah, exactly. So as far as natural heats versus synchronized heats, it comes down to heat detection is what we see regardless of the setup. So if it's a farm that typically uses only natural heats and they've not done big synchronization groups, synchronizing can be a difficult adjustment, just because you go from a couple at a time to all of a sudden there's a group of 20 running around. So who actually has the good standing heat versus one or two at a time? So those are sometimes the limitations when we're transitioning from one system to the next. But it depends again on the recips and the facility. So if it's an operation where we're going to a heifer raising facility and they're only going to be doing this one day, so we need to synchronize everything. If we have good heat detection, we have the best results. So whether that's natural heats, synchronized heats, if somebody can go down the line and say, yep, this recip was in heat this day, this, you know, before noon, afternoon, we see the best outcomes. And then rifling through stuff that maybe didn't have a heat or unsure about, and making determinations based on presence of a CL at that point. But overall, what I see as the best outcome is if we have reliable heat detection.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think you see better conception rates that way, and you're not throwing money down the drain on an embryo that you purchased on a iffy heat, right?
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Ashley, for answering our technical questions. I feel like we have to throw some of those in there, you know, and I want to get back to you on in all that you're involved in, because I feel like it's a lot. What other ways are you involved in the livestock industry?
Yeah, so I already mentioned that my family has a dairy farm. So we're producers ourselves. And so I think that's something that adds to my passion about this. I think if you ask anybody, I get pretty passionate about how we do and the outcomes and my recommendations. So I really try to treat all of these animals as if they were my own, and try to strive for those results that I personally would like to have. So the other part too is they're not only customers, but a lot of these people are friends. And so it's really rewarding to see their success and to be a part of that. So yeah, so I'm involved on the dairy farm side of things. I also help with the ETA government liaison committee. So I serve as the chair for that. And the main role there is to help facilitate conversations when it comes to a new health certificate that's being proposed by a country that wants to import US genetics. They may propose testing for every disease that's ever been indicated in a bovine since the dawn of time. And so our role is to read through those and say that disease is eradicated. It's not present in the United States. We are free of that disease, or stating things like USDA has TB-free designated states. So really, we don't want to have to test for TB because we already have a surveillance program in place. So really, it's just going through those different protocols, seeing what the husbandry practices are in the United States and what is going to be most advantageous for people to get product out of the United States. Now, we're not always able to get every negotiation request that we put in, but there's at least a layer in place trying to advocate for producers, keep costs to a minimum, get as much product out the door as we can. We like to use all the different research that we have to help support those decisions so we can go to bat and say, no, this is excessive. We need to renegotiate. So that's one of the biggest roles there. And then the only other thing I do is I serve on our state Holstein Association board. And so it's just fun to get to talk to different members from across the state, be involved in the industry from that side and kind of give back in a way to help make sure there's different cattle activities available for people. I grew up showing cattle, so it's fun to see that those programs still exist and can be made available for clients and their families.
So Ashley, it doesn't sound like you're busy at all. Like you have lots of free time on your hands.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're involved in some very interesting aspects of the industry. I know Emily and I, we've done an episode on export before, and there's just so many layers and complexities to that. And like you just outlined a whole nother one about other countries wanting to put in requirements that aren't necessarily feasible or right or whatever you said. And so I appreciate you advocating for us and trying to make all of that work. And it's a big system and there can be cogs, but we appreciate you advocating for that. You mentioned your state Holstein Association. I believe the National Holstein Convention is coming up this summer, and we're excited for it because it's in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. What is your involvement with that program this summer?
Yeah, so Minnesota is hosting this year's National Convention. And so the Minnesota and South Dakota state associations are combined, and I'm on the sponsorship committee for that. So I'm serving for the chair there and on the executive planning committee. So we're really excited for June 27th through June 1st are the dates. That'll be here before we know it. But we have a really exciting docket, and TransOva is actually going to be involved in kind of a couple different ways. So thank you for your support there. I think people will be really excited to see that from you guys. So just to kind of a quick rundown, we're having a fun welcome reception that has a casino night. And if you come to that, TransOva is actually donated a $1,500 certificate towards work being done. So if you come to that event, you can enter for that door prize. We also have tours that happen on Wednesday. And so that TransOva is also involved. They're one of the stops. So if you're a customer and you have never been to the main farm facility where it all began, now's your opportunity to be able to hop on that tour. And TransOva is also providing lunch for that. And then we also have a data and innovation summit. That'll be a morning event on Thursday, and we're really excited for that. We're bringing in data experts from all over the country, from different parts of the industry, just telling us, you know, we have robotics for everything. How do we actually collect all this data? How do we make it useful? And give it some hands-on applications to help the bottom line is what our goal is for that. And then the evening will be the national sale. And then Friday will be our closing luncheon banquet. So we'll get everybody out of here for the 4th of July weekend. But yeah, we have a pretty exciting docket.
Yeah, we're excited to be a tour stop on that Wednesday. We got excited to have everybody come through the Sioux Center, Iowa location on a charter bus. And I'll be a tour guide. So be on a different bus if you're coming. And then we're going to have lunch, it's a good reminder that I need to call them today. So thank you for that. but yeah, we're super excited to host the National Holstein Group and let them see the inside workings of our headquarters there in Sioux Center. So it sounds like it's going to be a good event.
Yeah, it's going to be a great event, and people will be here from all over the country. So if you've never been, good networking opportunity.
Well, Ashley, is there anything else that you'd like to add? Anything that you wish that Sarah and I would have asked you today?
I think you guys covered a lot of it.
Okay.
I think one other thing that when people always ask me why I work with Transova, you know, there's other labs out there. Why do you work with Transova? And I think it comes down to a lot of the relationships that I've built there. I'm always able to pick up the phone and say, you know, this is something that we have maybe a concern about. How are we going to approach this? How are we going to improve it? And everybody's always been so responsive. We've been able to stand behind our work. Transova has helped us support customers. And so being able to maintain relationships with our clients and to work together to help them in their end goals and success. I think Transova has really helped us do that.
Well, we appreciate the relationship that we have with you, Ashley, and we appreciate the kind words as well. I know we're proud of things that we do as the Transova team. And so it's always great to hear an outside perspective on that as well. So we appreciate that. And we especially appreciate you joining us today. Thank you for your time. And, you know, we have some extra time. We could keep drilling you with those technical questions, but we won't do that. We'll be nice.
I do have one more question for you, Ashley. You know, you mentioned why Transova. What advice would you give to another practitioner that maybe is on the fence of adding IVF to their toolbox of services?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think overall, developing the skill is probably the first hurdle in any new service. And you guys have the university now, TOGU. And so there's an opportunity for people to actually come and do a training session. We went for a session, my lab technician and I, and then actually was able to set up animals on my own farm to continue practicing. So getting that skill set in place would be the first piece that I would figure out if I was a practitioner starting again. And then offering it as a service, I would say it's only going to help improve your customer's experience, your ability to grow as a practice. And so overall, I would encourage people to consider it, but just make sure you put your skills to good practice and make sure that you can offer the best product forward.
Good. Thank you. That was good. I like that answer.
Yeah, that was a good question. I know that it probably gets asked all the time. People probably ask me that and I don't even realize it. So yeah, that was a good one to throw in there.
Well, I think sometimes there's people that are 100% believers in IVF, and then there's still some people that are not yet. So it's a good question to throw out there for anybody on the fence, I think.
And I don't think everybody has to have a huge investment to get into it. I mean, a lot of people already have an ultrasound. So it's just getting the probe that you need for your system. And then as far as a facility, we don't have a private facility that's owned by our clinic, but we partner with some of our established clients. And so that's changed over time as far as where we offer those satellite services. But we basically have haul-in facilities with farms that we have good relationships with that are maybe doing a number of collections themselves. And so you don't have to have a huge investment to start this. It can maybe just be a farm you're already working at that's able to make a few modifications themselves to provide the adequate chute space that's climate controlled and a lab space for you. It can be done. And we actually started when we did a couple of collections, we were able to collect out of our mobile unit. So we just set up all of our IVF equipment, just like we do for our flushes. It's a little tighter for space, but it can be done with some modifications. So don't think you need to spend like $500,000 building a donor facility to try to offer this to clients. It can be done at a more, much more reasonable, in a much more reasonable approach.
I think that's a great point to highlight, because I think there's sometimes that misconception that it has to be this state of the art, you know, brand new facility in order to make it work. And I think there's a lot of locations around the country who have, like you said, Ashley, kind of, you know, figured out how to make it work. So I think that was a good recommendation. Mm-hmm. Well, Ashley, we appreciate you joining us again today. Thank you. Thank you for your time. We know it's a busy time of year, and so you taking the time to sit down with us, we appreciate that. Is there anything else you wanted to add today, or anything else you were hoping to talk about?
I think that's it. Your question list that you sent me was very thorough.
Well, good. That means Emily and I are doing our jobs then, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. Well, thank you, Ashley. We appreciate it. And we hope we'll see you at the National Hosting Convention. So thank you and good luck with that.
Yes, thank you. And I should say, if anyone wants to register, they probably need to know how to do that. So it's just 2022nationalhostingconvention.com, and you can just register online and select for that tour. And it's only $35 to actually attend for the tour itself. So
that's a steal.
Everything's very reasonably priced. So take a look, check it out, register, and hope to see you there.
Yeah, and we'll post a link on the episode notes for that too. So it'll be handy for anybody that's interested.
Yes, because we want you to come see us at Transova.
Come have lunch with us.
Well, thanks again, Ashley, for joining us today. You've gone over a lot of great information for everybody that's listening that wants to know more. We'll go ahead and make sure that we will attach information on the embryo information from the AETA on the FSH issue that we discussed. And then we'll also link your Facebook page so that if people want to get in contact with you specifically, they can do that. And then we'll also link information about the National Hosting Convention for those of you who that piqued your interest and you want to come see us at the end of June, beginning of July. So thanks again, Ashley. We appreciate it. And we will see everybody on another episode of the Powered by Transova podcast.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.